pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And long may she wave.
I know most of you know us, but just in case there's someone who doesn't, maybe we could identify ourselves.
Kelly Demers, Partridge Way.
Joe Wagner, 26 State Road.
Don Hernan, Vice Chairman.
Cecile Dupuy, 53 Chapel Shores Road.
Paul Boucher, 88 Old Pump Road.
Our chairman is not Rod Tate, who's got some other activities. He couldn't be here tonight. I'm sure he regrets it quite a bit. But okay, this is a public proceeding. Well, and unless the board specifically votes to go into executive session, which we're not going to do, you have the right to hear everything that is being said and to look at all the exhibits that are being offered. Please notify the chairman if you are having difficulty seeing or hearing the presentation. Now, this meeting is being recorded, but it's not being carried on YouTube. So I'm sorry for that, for the many people who would probably be watching us. All persons speaking will be asked to first state their name and address or affiliation. All questions and comments will be directed to and through the chairman. It's required that you sign the sign-in sheet, thank you for doing that, to document your attendance at this meeting, at this hearing, I should say. Thank you in advance for your cooperation. Oh, I get it. Anyway, okay, so the purpose of this, we just did a site walk for the Middle Road telecommunications tower, and that's, we're going to discuss that later, but right now, we're just going to go over these proposed zoning amendments, of which there are copies there. And it's not, I don't know, I don't think it's rocket science. Nothing sneaky in here that I know of. Maybe there are some. But we would like, and I guess Cecile, you're recording, so we'll get whatever comments you have. But let's go through them one at a time and take comments and see where we are from there. Okay, the first one is under Section 631, Principal Building Use. Principal building and uses, and it covers the three districts we have, the residential, the general purpose, and the commercial residential. And the new reading is in the residential district, one principal building, along with accessory buildings per lot, meeting the lot size, setback, and lot coverage requirements of Section 6.2, which is, we haven't changed any of that. So basically, what we're doing is we took out the words, we're making it less restrictive. We're allowing more, not we, but if we vote, if the voters vote in these changes, it'll allow more accessory buildings per lot for the residential district. And the same, basically the same thing for general purpose. It reads, one principal building along with accessory buildings per lot, meeting the lot size and setback and lot coverage requirements of Section 6.2. So, same. And then for C, the number of buildings and uses in the commercial residential district will be determined by the maximum total lot coverage requirements of Section 6.2. So, is there any, you know, we had, what was there was a little restrictive. I think there was a case where, I think it was the number of barns you could put on a farm was an issue. And that went through as, I think it's a challenge or something to the Zoning Board of Appeals. If this wording would presumably prevent that from happening again. In other words, it allows more accessory buildings per lot. So, I mean, yes, ma'am.
Can you define?
Please state your name.
Judith
St. Ange. Yeah. If I can answer your question.
Can you define accessory buildings? Would it include another home on the lot?
If I may.
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things we have with the barns, the other thing is if you have a house and a garage, you cannot have a little small storage shed for your lawnmower or your motorcycle or your skidoo or anything like that. Being realistic, we said, wait a minute, this is too constrictive because if you have a detached garage, you can't have a storage shed. Farm, you know, they'd be restricted to the main building in one barn. Where are they going to store their hay or their tractors or their implements?
That doesn't work.
Right, so we're making it more streamlined and more user-friendly.
There is a definition.
Yeah, and it reads,
go ahead, Joe.
A use or structure of a nature customarily incidental and subordinate to those of a principal use or structure.
So it's not anything that we're basically trying to, if the voters agree, we're trying to make it easier for people to accommodate accessory buildings on their lots. So we don't want to get in situations where with a large lot in particular, it would not make any sense not to allow another accessory building, but the wording of the zoning ordinance, which we have to follow, is restrictive, and that gave us an issue, which we're trying to alleviate by changing this wording. Were there any other questions on this one? I'll go to the next one. Okay. You might find this one more interesting. I don't know. Maybe not. Okay. This is contract zoning. And the wording is, shall an amendment to the Town of Lyman Zoning Ordinance, Article 1, Section 1.8.3F, contract zoning be enacted as follows. And the first part is the same. It's just basically, we're talking about a recommendation, and I'll just read it. Before forwarding a recommendation of a contract zoning amendment to the Board of Selectmen, the Planning Board shall make a finding on each of the four standards in this subsection. A favorable recommendation to the Board of Selectmen requires a positive finding on all four standards. If the Planning Board makes a negative requirement on any of the standards, its recommendation shall be negative. That makes sense. The Planning Board shall base its recommendations on whether the rezoning... Okay, and then we had listed four criteria. The change knocks out the first criteria. The first criteria previously read is for land with an unusual nature or location. And for the life of me, I'm not sure how that got in there. I'm sure I voted for it, and et cetera. But it's, in our opinion, I think of the Planning Board, at least most of the members, or all the members, I hope, this is too subjective. Because you say, well, what's unusual nature or location? I don't know. You can look up the word unusual, and people have done that and defined it, et cetera. But it leaves it open for interpretation. And certainly as a member of the Planning Board, I don't mind interpreting something. And we do that a little bit in the shoreland zoning, but I would prefer not to. Prefer to have it laid out so that it can be interpreted in only one way. And this wording is very, to me, is very wishy-washy. That's why we're recommending it be stricken. So we got rid of that. The second one didn't change. It's consistent with a comprehensive plan, which we have, et cetera. The third one is, here's where it gets a little interesting. Is consistent with, we have the words now, but not limited to, the existing uses and permitted uses within any zoning district. And we are recommending, the Planning Board is recommending taking out the words, but not limited to. And the reason we're recommending that, at least my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, is that this leaves the contract zoning open to any use. So in other words, even if somebody came up with a use that was not permitted under the zoning regulations anywhere in town, conceivably, the Planning Board and the Select Board could go forth and get a contract with the owner to come up with a use that was totally different. I should come up with some strange ones, I'm sure, but I don't know why I think about this. Probably bad for me, but I was thinking if you had... For example, if you wanted to have an adult entertainment club in town, which I don't think we allow anywhere, but under contract zoning current wording, you could do that because it's a use. It's a use. So what we're trying to do with this, what we're recommending here is to get rid of those four words, but not limited to, so that the contract zone has to go under a use that's authorized in one of the three zones in the town. So that's a pretty big change. So... Okay.
Can I add to that, Don?
Yeah.
I think also this is more consistent with the state definition of contract zoning. I believe that we, not limited to, must have been something that we added at some point.
I don't know
because
how
that
it
was
got
not,
in there.
Otherwise, yeah. It was verbatim, I think, with the state definition.
Yeah, I think the dog did it, but I don't know how it got in there. That's... Okay. The next one is we didn't change. The conditions are proposed are sufficient to meet the intent of this section. Okay, and then the next one we did add will have beneficial effects on the town as a whole, which would not result if the property were developed under the existing zoning district designation. So I hope that's not too weasel wordy, but we were trying to say, okay, for the contract zone to go into effect for this particular property, there's got to be some beneficial effect for the town. Otherwise, why would we do it? But we wanted to put that in there so it will be explicitly stated. That's all there is on that one. Does somebody have any questions on this? Any? Yes, sir.
Dave Alice, can you give us an example of that?
Of what? Of a beneficial use?
Yes.
I guess you could say, let me think of it. Let me think of a sleazy example here. Let's say it allowed some sort of a business
or activity.
A commercial activity.
That would otherwise not be permitted.
And that would help with assessments and things like that. So
I was going to say someone wants to put a nice restaurant in and don't believe it fall under commercial zone, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
We want to have it in the village. It'd be a contract zoning. It'd be beneficial to town. We'd appreciate it. You could walk, have lunch, or, instead of going out of town and bring funds and revenue into the town. So that's, I'm thinking, an example that we brought up at the time that would be beneficial.
Another issue with this, too, is if the contract is going to increase what the town services. If there's a hit, normally the commercial zone has different rules, like for traffic. It's more, it's more conducive to traffic and that kind of thing. If you're putting this in residential and general purpose, there's more of a hit on the town with those services to monitor the traffic or put up lights or whatever. So if there's a cost, if it's going to cost the town more to have that contract in a district where it's not allowed, then that would I think qualify for that point.
Or be a negative one.
Right, be a negative. Wouldn't be a negative effect as opposed to a beneficial one.
Yeah, I don't know. Anybody have any other questions? Thank you, sir.
My name's Jonathan Tibbetts. It seems like that will have benefit effect is very subjective. We took in number one, you crossed out because it was subjective.
Right, correct.
You know, so the benefit effect, it depends on who's voting on it, whether they want it or not.
Yeah, that's true.
I think what we were going for is something, a reasonable expectation that it will be a beneficial effect.
Yeah, I know when Paul Lorraine went in, he went through contract zoning and was met with quite a bit of resistance, and that could have been a way to deny him that permit. Now people seem to really like that place. You know? And that's, anytime you have that benefit, or if somebody's following the rules for contract zoning, going through the process, and it comes down to somebody doesn't feel like it's a benefit for the town, whether it is or it isn't, it almost shouldn't matter because if they're following the rules on this. So I think anytime you put in something so subjective as beneficial for the town, it's
okay.
You could take, for instance, if you pick on Paul or Lorraine again, he's done a particularly good job maintaining that contract zoning, keeping up with whatever he's supposed to do, the bathrooms end like he's supposed to do. But I think he could have been shut down pretty easily at the start of it, and he would have been serving alcohol on a zone that wasn't supposed to.
Well, that's part of the reason why it's contract zoning, and we have the standards, and we have the public meetings, so that people can express their concerns and go, I don't want a heating oil fueling depot that's going to have 40 semis coming in and going every single day.
Yeah.
Would that be beneficial? Most likely not in a residential neighborhood.
Well, I see your point.
Expressing concerns.
But if he's, if he's in the residential neighborhood with a large land base, access to, say, 111, and he can be shut down just because somebody doesn't like him there. If he's meets all the requirements, he's not, has a direct access to a main road. So, in that, you could look at it both ways. Yes, he's making more noise. Yes, he has a bunch of trucks, but he's also bringing income to the town, well, creating tax dollars.
I think the thing is, when a person comes in for a contract zone, they're asking for a use that is not allowed in that area. And we only have three districts in the town. So they're coming in and they're saying, hey, I want to do this. It's not allowed in that particular zone, that district. I should say not a zone. But I want to do it anyway. And there's got to be some justification, because the reason we have three zones is because there there's a commercial zone for certain types of activities. It's a commercial residential zone. Then there's a residential zone, and then there's a general purpose zone. It's a catch-22. If you look at the land use tables, you can see what's allowed in each zone. And some things are allowed in all zones, some are only allowed in two zones. It's going to be a little bit subjective anyway, but the person's coming. This is just a way to allow for a contract with an existing owner, by the way, to allow for something, an exception to the rules. So there's got, in my opinion, there should be some, and I agree with you, it could be subjective, but there should be some beneficial. But I take your point. Yeah, Dave.
Dave Dallas, could you put, not to make it more complicated, but could you put examples of that, you know, whether it be financial ease of, like you were saying, to go to a restaurant, can you give a couple of things so people can, so that it doesn't be, so that it's not.
Right, gotcha. We can take that under advisement. We're here mainly to get, here tonight to get comments.
Yeah, exactly. We want to get feedback.
Which is good.
And by doing so, I think we'd also have to kind of revert back to that language, but not limited to. Mm-hmm. If there's some in there. Maybe rewearing it in a fashion such as this, that there is a reasonable expectation that the proposed use will, on the whole, have beneficial effects on the town. Again, beneficial is subjective, but maybe pressing it in that way indicates that we're taking a look at all positives and potential negatives on this, and are ruling in favor of the positives.
Judy?
Yeah. Doesn't contract zoning basically nullify all of our zoning laws? If anybody can go ahead and try to get an exception?
Well, that's one way to look at it. I agree. That's a way to look at it. That is a little bit of, and that's why I have an issue with that, the four words, but not limited to, because the way that's written now, depending on how you want to interpret it, the way I interpret it is that basically, you could have a contract zone for any type of activity that was not even allowed in any zone in the town. And that's one of the reasons. That's the main thing we wanted to do, in my opinion at least, main thing we wanted to do to change this. And then we discussed the rest of it and came up with some other questions too. But we wanted to get rid of those four words because that made it like open season on any kind of an activity, any place in town. And I'm not saying all activities are bad, but we have, again, the land use tables, which describe which activities are permitted in each town. These are voted on, they're part of the ordinance, and they've been voted on by the voters. So to have those four words in there, that's the reason we want to get rid of those, because that opens it up too much, in my opinion.
And so the burden is on the applicant as to why this should be, some exception of any type should be made.
Yeah. Any other questions on this? And so the comment, when I'm taking out of this, there's a comment that beneficial may be too subjective. We'll have to take a look at that. Thank you.
Any suggestions on the wording?
Well,
I like it.
You do?
I like it too.
And you are?
Dave Dulong.
Yes, hi Dave.
I like that also. I think it needs to have at least something in there that says this is beneficial to the town.
Yeah.
If it's not beneficial, I agree with, like you said before, why do it?
Why do it?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, so there's pro. Okay. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to go on to the next one. If someone's got some other comments, I think we got your comments there. Hopefully got them. Okay, all right, let me see here. This is the... Okay, I'm not going to read this whole thing, but I am the secretary. Okay, this is the Article 10, Section 22, Performance Standards for Medical Marijuana. Section 10.22 starts out with performance standards, and it lists purpose, blah, 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 exemptions, and then it says, in addition to the requirements of the districts of which the caregiver use is located, it lists a bunch of other additional requirements. And what we're asking to do is change a couple of those that will affect, and I'll read what they are. So we were going to change, and this was number four. A home production facility is limited to caregivers with a license from the state of Maine for 30 plants. So we wanted to add that in there as a under that medical marijuana production facility. And then under item number six, we wanted to read medical marijuana shall be distributed to medical marijuana patients by delivery or at a dispensary and shall not be sold directly to patients at the home. In other words, we wanted to make it a little, I can say it's right.
More restrictive so that
a little more restrictive.
Down private roads to get from their caregiver. Caregiver can deliver it, but you're not going to have all this traffic running up and down.
Right, to take it away from the home. So that's a little more restrictive.
And I believe this was also in following the state ordinances as well.
Right.
Yes, right. It was changed in the state.
And then over...
Does the number 30, is that also...
That came from the state.
That's the state issue, as I remember.
Right.
Yeah, that's not the number we went.
Yeah, we didn't bring it up. The next one was number 10, which was changed. And this had to do with odors, and it's what it's stated now is a complaint of odor shall be investigated by the code enforcement officer, assuming we have one. If the code enforcement officer confirms there is an odor crossing the property line to abutting properties, the code enforcement officer has authority to require remediation within 5 days of the confirmed odor complaint. The code enforcement officer has the authority to rescind the permit of a home production that does not comply with the enforcement order. A rescinded permit may only be renewed with the approval of the planning board, with approval by the planning board. So this is puts a little teeth in there, more teeth in there for the potential of odor complaints. And I don't know personally whether there have been any odor complaints for home growing or not. And I have not heard any. I don't know if that was adding or not, but that was a sort of a request that we add that in there. And we took out number 12 on this, which was dispensing of medical marijuana to medical marijuana patients shall not take place prior to blah, blah. Well, that would be non-applicable because of the previous recommended change, which makes the home person deliver, not sell it directly to patients. So it wouldn't be any patients, so this part, number 12, is not applicable. Okay.
And just a couple technicalities. There's a strike through number 6 that should not
be there. Yeah, that shouldn't be there.
And 13 should be read number 12.
Okay.
And back up to the contract zoning, 2, 3, and 4 should read 1, 2, 3.
Right, they got a reading number. Hopefully we can do that. Okay, let's see, where are we?
We go down to number 8.
Number 8.
Yeah, this is under Section 1022B, which is medical marijuana production facility, which is different than, different from, I should say, my wife keeps telling me, the medical marijuana home production facility. So what we are asking for there is...
Can you explain the difference between the first one and the second? You said home. I'm I know what it is, but I don't know if everybody.
Well, I mean, home production.
That means somebody's running it out of their house.
Yeah, it's a caregiver's.
Versus a separate building that's.
Right, where it's for production. So in other words, if you're a home caregiver, et cetera, you can the state law allows you to use your primary year-round residence and grow these plants. Whereas
and that's why I think it's a good idea to not have a sales there, because your next door neighbor might not want these people coming in
right.
and out.
Right. Yeah. Which would be restricted if the word goes through. And whereas the other one, the part B, is for a regular production facility where you would have a greenhouse, and it'd be for commercial production. Okay, moving right along. Let's see here. So we wanted to add number 8 here. There shall be no dispensing or sales of medical marijuana from a property which is located on a private road unless the owner can provide documentation of participation in the road association to pay proportionately to the maintenance and upkeep of the road, period. Otherwise, dispensing a product which is grown on a property located on a private road shall be done from a facility approved as a dispensary. So this is to try to alleviate issues with properties that are located on private roads where there are, I guess you could make, if I lived on that private road and I was not the person with the production facility, the marijuana production facility, then I would not like it, the fact that there was more traffic on there. So we're trying to make it a little more, call it restrictive, call it more appropriate to accommodate any issues with the private road. So that's the reason why.
I just noticed that kind of contradicts number 6 where we state there shall be no by delivery or dispensary will not be sold directly from a patient's house or home.
Well, wait now.
You're in a different section.
You're in a different section.
That's for home production.
Home production versus
commercial enterprise.
Commercial.
Yeah, they were in the commercial.
D.
This is a production facility.
Okay.
Just looking up for the residents.
Okay. Okay. Is there any comments on that particular one? Let's see what else is. I think that's. Oh, yeah, then. I'm not trying to rush it, but. Then there is. There's a couple of definition changes here that would be Article 12 of our wonderful zoning ordinance has a list of definitions, and we're trying to, as we go through the process, update them. So what we want to do is under the definition of medical marijuana home production, we're adding the words, I'll read the whole thing now, the way it will read is growing, cultivating, processing, and or storing medical marijuana by a registered medical marijuana caregiver who is licensed by the state of Maine for 30 plants at his or her primary residence as a home occupation use. So we added the words, we want to make sure that they understand the definition indicates that you got to have a license, otherwise you can't do it. So that seems pretty straightforward. And then under medical marijuana production facility, we're adding some words here, and I know it's a long definition, but a building used for cultivating, processing, testing, storing of medical marijuana and or distribution by a medical marijuana caregiver at a location which is not the caregiver's primary year-round residence or their qualifying patient's primary year residence, and or a caregiver licensed by the state of Maine for a 500-foot canopy grow. These shall be considered a commercial use. So we're adding in some requirements from the state of Maine into that definition. Are there any questions on that?
Question. Did they change the canopy license law for that 500 square foot?
I'm not sure.
I don't believe that's a commercial grow.
You think it's too small or too big?
It's too small. You're talking a 20 by 25 room. So for my license, I have what's called a canopy license.
Yeah, what's yours?
It's 500 square feet. It's
right.
Limited to, I think it's 60 plants. So that is literally a third of the size of this room. So we're not talking a lot of square footage here. And that.
Are you saying that should not be, well, what would that be if that wasn't the production facility?
It should be under the residential.
No, you have to live there.
Well.
You can empty the bedroom.
This is, remember.
You know, so that's the thing about this is that's literally a bedroom size, right? Not 500 square foot.
That's a big bedroom.
Okay, my smallest greenhouse is 1,400 square feet, which is a 27 by 48.
So that's one licensed caregiver. If you had two caregivers, I think that would probably double. I think it's per caregiver.
The canopy?
I believe so.
No, the canopy license is a 500 square foot license that you can grow what you need for plants in that area.
What this definition, the production facility, states that it's not the caregiver's primary year-round residence.
Right.
So.
But when you, to me, that 500 foot, there are people that have residents that are using that canopy license.
Yeah.
They're still living in the house. They just use the basement. You know, so it, I think that.
Then that would be a home grow.
They can't have more than 30 plants.
You can on a canopy license.
I'm not sure they, sounds, I don't know, that sounds a little strange.
It is.
Okay, one of the things, this is for not their primary residence. If you're doing it at your residence, that's a different field.
Well, if it's medical.
He says a location which is not the caregiver's primary year-round residence or qualified patient's primary year-round residence.
Okay, so there's a question there. Apparently, I hope we can see if
we can now look up the state.
We're gonna have to look this up.
Look
at
the state laws.
I can't answer you on that. No, we don't want to put anything in there that's incorrect. That's for sure.
You're saying the 500 square feet is just way too small.
I'm saying that is not a commercial production area. You know, and that's my thing. My thought on this is, you know, then. And then your definition on number four, a home production facility is limited to a caregiver license with a stated limit of only 30 plants. So I can get a canopy license under a home care license, so your definitions don't add up there. They're contradicting, you know, so it's, I think that you're on to the right track, but you're...
Okay.
Number four,
they're not lined up here.
Well,
so if I'm at my house and I have a canopy license,
yeah,
I fall under
commercial
license even though I'm at my house and I'm in a 20 by 25 square foot room. So that's, I agree that you have to have oversight on all kinds of stuff, but this doesn't line up.
Okay.
But if you're at your home, it's not the second one, it's the first one. The first one is for the home production.
Yeah.
If you're not at your home.
But I am at my home.
Then it's home production.
But not under this license because this is 30 plants. The canopy license allows them to leave 40 plants.
Well, what you're saying is they should address that too.
Yeah.
So yeah. So stuff needs.
We need an expert in marijuana growing.
Oh, there you go.
But we don't have any.
No, you. And it's.
But you can find one.
Yeah.
And the laws change every year. That's the other part of this.
Yeah. Okay. We'll have to see what we can do on this.
We'll think of that.
I don't think we can answer you tonight on that, but I appreciate
it. Number six, what's the difference between a customer coming to me and me leaving on the private road and going to the customer? It's still the same amount of trips.
Not necessarily.
If I leave my private road to go out to the end of the road because you won't allow my customer to come in, it still trips on that road.
Well, the only thing I would comment, and then ask other comments, would be, you know, in theory, you could go make all your deliveries in one trip, right? You don't have to have, if you're running out and running back, you're wasting a lot of gas. But anyway, any comments?
That was my comment. I mean, most of them would...
Do a round, go out and do your deliveries and come back.
A planned delivery.
Yeah. I'll be in Shaw's parking lot at 7:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was,
The The other part of this, though, is it seems like we're getting really restrictive on private roads.
Absolutely.
Whether it's marijuana or whatever we're doing on private roads. You know, so in my case, I live on a private road. My neighbors are tearing my road all up. But because I'm the business, I have to show that I'm maintaining that road. You know, so it shouldn't be on the business side of this all the time. You know, so like my road, there's three businesses on it. Three businesses take care of the road. The residential on the road doesn't do anything. You know, and it seems like we're going more and more towards everybody has more rights on that road other than the business on that road.
Well, if it's, I mean, there's two sides to that story.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know what, I mean, the answer, of course, in my humble opinion, because I live on a town road, by the way, is that there should be some sort of an agreement or a homeowners road association that would take care of the road and allocate the cost fairly. Now, if people don't want to do that, and it's not in the deed, it's not in the covenant that's attached to the deed, then you got a problem because you can't force them to do it. And the town, if it's a private road, I don't think the town can come in there and demand things.
Next question, does the town have any jurisdiction over a private road? If they're not maintaining it, they're not plowing it, they're not doing anything on it, why does the town get to tell me what I can and can't do on my private road?
Because you're coming, not you personally, but because an applicant is coming here and saying, hey, I want to create a business on a private road. And so we go through the public hearing process of blah, blah, blah. And there's got to be some fairness there. If a person is coming in and changing the use of that property or asking to change the use of that property, which will generate more traffic. And again, each case presumably is different.
If you're in general purpose, you buy on a private road in general purpose, there's an assumption there that you're going to be able to put a business on that road.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's also an assumption you should pay your cost of if you're damaging the road.
Yep. I mean,
or not damaging it, but
using the road.
Using it. So.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know what the good answer is, if there is one here. But I don't see.
I think everyone's been going. It seems like this private road thing keeps coming up all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it seems like it always gets put on business.
Well, they generate traffic.
One of the best ways to have a private road is to have a solid private road maintenance agreement. Part of the stipulation is that the annual maintenance is charged proportionately due based on use. If you're at the very beginning of the road and you make one trip a day, your use to that road is minimized. If you're at the very end and you have a business and you have 28 workers and they're coming in and out with their private vehicles, plus commercial equipment, their impact on that road is going to be substantially greater than those at the beginning.
It is, but we also both have the same right to that road.
Yeah. We're not going to, I don't think we're going to solve that.
Right. And this is nothing we can change. We can't do anything about it.
Well, I mean, I take your point, but okay. I guess we noted your point. We're not going to solve it right now. I think there was another question in the back, please.
Yeah, Elizabeth.
I'm sorry?
Elizabeth Keith, 57 Huff Road.
Yes, ma'am.
So my question is this, where does that stop, though? Do we have the same, so for residential marijuana, because it's coming out of your home, potential traffic, do you do that for farm stands, someone selling corgis, or daycare licenses? Like, are we also doing that to them, or is this, where does that, who meets the definition? You could have a daycare with 15 employees, and you could have, where does that stop, and where does it end? This, in fact, seems more subjective than actually the terminology we were talking about before. So
when you say this, you're referring to what?
This, when you were talking about the traffic. So we were talking about the traffic in and out, especially what this gentleman was saying. So where do we draw the line there? Like what businesses are okay to have people leaving in and out or whatever and using their roads, and what businesses are not okay?
Presumably, when the person starting the business comes in for a permit to be able to do that, They have to follow the same, they have to follow the rules too. And one of the items that the planning board, in its infinite wisdom, so to speak, should be looking at is what the traffic situation is. And I'm not saying that you can't come up with an example of somebody who has an existing business in some area where maybe they have more traffic and you're trying to start a new business and you think maybe you're being restricted. I mean, there's always the possibility of that. But, you know, each case should be judged under the zoning ordinance at the time.
Residential marijuana business being judged individually by the amount of plants that they have, the amount of...
Well, state law does.
That's state.
We're not...
Okay.
I don't care what you grow, frankly, but personally...
I would think even, say, a daycare facility on a residential road would probably have more traffic than a 30-plant cannabis.
And they have to come before the board, and same thing, public hearing.
They're supposed to. Yeah, they do, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's like everything else. Somebody comes in and we...
I just didn't know if they were if they came under each home business, because, mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen some farm stands that have some pretty good traffic.
Right? Yeah.
So are they held to the same standard?
Well, the same. See that?
See?
In theory, yes.
Yeah.
In theory, yes. Okay. In practice, right. This is a small town.
Right.
Typically, there's a single code enforcement officer. The planning board reviews the projects in accordance with our zoning ordinances, and we do the best we can. After that, enforcement is up to the code enforcement officer. Again, that's one person. So if somebody comes in and gets approval for a business and then maybe exceeds what they said they were going to do, then that could be an issue. Could be an issue. Anyhow. Yes, Dave?
Yeah, Dave DeLong again. Just you brought the child care up. That's a good example because I was personally involved in one on a private road, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. And when we got the permit, it was written right on the permit that we had to plow the road, sand the road, et cetera, as far as the daycare.
And that's a private road?
Private road.
Private road. Yeah.
And there can be conditions. The planning board, again, in its infinite wisdom, can put on conditions on a permit to say things to that effect if it appears to be necessary at the time. But again, okay. Do we have any other? We got all your comments now? I'm not trying to rush you, but we're going to go on to something else.
Number 12.
Number 12.
The one that you crossed out.
I was another one I was going to mention afterwards. Go ahead.
I believe it. It might be redundant, but it does protect people in residential zones. It does keep people in more of a business time frame.
Well, it's in conflict with the previous one. I mean, if we take out the ability for distribution at the home, then you can't say that you can dispense it. You can't have both. In other words,
yeah, you're talking about the residential one.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
Under it's under well,
yeah, you're not going to allow
1022A. If you're not going to allow it, you can't have 12 in there. 12's not.
No, it's
not going to work.
The commercial one is set up with the times. The non-residential one. There's two. That's why I say you got to keep in mind. One is somebody who's living in their own house and having their own grow, and the other one has a separate facility.
So why are you limiting somebody that's in their own house that they can't sell out of their house?
We're trying to minimize the effect on the area.
But if they're not on a private road, then why are you limiting them? So you've only got a handful of private roads in Lyman.
Oh, I don't say
but
that.
But this doesn't...
plow quite a few of them.
Yeah, Dave, you got a comment?
Yeah, this doesn't matter if it's a private road or public road or whatever.
Right.
It's a situation where if my neighbor has a grow next door, my kids are in the yard playing, I just don't want people going in and out of there constantly. Traffic, whatever. So I think it's a really good thing to put in here.
Why do you have more right over what they do on their property?
I think so we got the gist of this here. I don't want to continue too much more.
If I could, you're saying others would have more rights over the private road than you.
I'm saying we,
however, by the operation of business on a road and having excessive customers, you are, in fact, potentially competing on other occupancy's rights.
That's not what I was
what I was saying is on a private road,
okay,
then you shouldn't be able to limit my business. It shouldn't matter whether I'm doing marijuana or I'm growing corn or
I understand your comment.
Yeah.
I understand
that's my comment.
Comment.
And it seems like it extends back to a private road. So it's...
Okay.
Can I add something? This might have something to do with the changes in the state laws, because before you were limited to like 30 plants per patient and all of that stuff. So there was a limit as to the dispensing of your product. And I think now the rules have changed with this canopy or whatever.
Right,
you have the potential of dispensing. You're not limited to specific patients. You can dispense to anyone who has a card. I think that's why, you know, that prompted this restriction.
These recommendations were made based on state regulations.
Well,
changes, we looked at that one.
Right, but
that deemed compliant with the state.
Canopy license is considered a home caregiver's license. It's just the next size up.
If it's on your primary residence or on that of one of your patients. But if you rent a property across the street or if you have it on a vacant lot, it's not your primary residence, it's no longer personal, it's commercial.
Well, okay. Thank you for your comments.
Yeah.
I'm going to move along if that's okay. I mean, whether there is or not, I think I've got the gist of it. We do have one other thing we wanted to mention.
I'm going to say one more thing. The reason I'm bringing this all up,
yeah,
my business is completely different than anything else that's going on. What I did is I got a canopy license to have roughly 40 plants, and I sell small plants.
Okay.
They're unregulated plants. It's not product. I'm not doing any of that side of it. So that's something that isn't addressed anywhere on this. So because I'm not selling a marijuana product, because by the state definition, it's an unregulated plant because of the size. So there's more to this than this. So like my greenhouse center, I am all licensed to sell clones through my greenhouse center, through my cash register by the state of Maine and the town of Lyman. So,
but you're selling plants, right?
I'm selling plants.
Okay, so...
But that's my point in this. So there needs to be...
Do you want us to regulate the selling of plants?
No, there's more to it, though. The licensing doesn't add up with what...
Okay, we're going to have to get a review on this. And,
you know, that's,
could we refer to the questions such as this to the Office of Marijuana Policy at the state level?
Yeah.
And see if they consider this.
And even,
what kind of guidance they can give us.
Yeah, and even depending on who you talk to, you'll get a different answer.
Yeah,
that's helpful.
And in the definition, marijuana is not an agricultural product, so they're two separate things, right? They're,
right.
The farm, what you're selling in your greenhouse, fruits and vegetables and all of that, is a farm product. So,
correct, but the plants are a gray area because technically I'm selling a plant, not a product.
Okay.
So...
Thank you. There's one other item here, and that's the very last item. And this is an amendment to the zoning map. The proposal is to change the zone from general purpose to residential from Chantel Lane to South Waterboro Road for a distance westerly of 1,000 feet from Huff Road. So, we're talking about Huff Road here, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes.
So we had a request from, was it a resident?
It was a 9.5-acre parcel
Basically, Huff and Sweatburg.
And they were really close to the residential zone, in fact, I think.
And no one did.
It's like right next door to them, or the next piece of land was in the general purpose.
What we're trying to do is, if you look at the zoning map, there's a small strip on Huff Road. That goes from residential to
general purpose,
and then back to residential, which restricts the person's use of that property for 1,000 feet, roughly 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
Why it was left off when the map was drawn, we don't know.
I'm representing that property on Charney Road.
maybe you could explain your reason for request.
They can explain.
So the reason, the original request was that, so Elizabeth Keith is my mother, so is because my parents are looking to divide the property for the children and grandchildren. And as it is zoned right now, they are unable to do that.
Right.
So that was the reasoning for the zoning. Additionally, we had requested some additional information, but we have not been able to get a callback regarding any of our questions from, I think it's the, what is that, the town?
Code enforcement.
Yeah, code enforcement. So we have, I've left, I think, a month's worth of messages, but we have yet to receive anything back. So that's, we saw that, you know, obviously this meeting was coming up and we're here. So, but we are looking to have it changed to residential.
So with this, apparently this would, I think that's, I mean, that's the reason we have this in here, actually.
Yeah.
This would satisfy your situation.
Well, my question is, I was really trying to look at it, and to be honest, that's not, I didn't go to school to read, you know, code enforcement laws for, you know, town residential permits and whatnot.
Right.
But what is the current law for residential and how we could divide up a 9.5 acre parcel?
Residential has a requirement for a 3 acre minimum.
So could
general purpose is a requirement for 5 acre minimum.
Okay.
So if you're at 9.5 acres, you got a problem.
3 plus.
I'm saying in general purpose, you got an issue. You can't divide it because you don't have 10 acres.
Right, but as a residential, if it's changed to residential, we could divide it into 3.3 and 3.5.
I would think so. Yeah,
right.
I mean, that sounds right.
So that's what we want. So that's what we're doing.
So are you saying the entire length of the Huff Road is residential on both sides of the road,
except for
that?
No,
because that's not my understanding.
No. What do we got here?
And are you talking about changing the zoning for the entire length?
No.
It's a small portion.
It's Huff Road and Chantel Lane.
I'll give you the real answer here. I mean, the real answer is we got a map, which is green and orange, like, and pink. And it shows our zoning, okay? We don't have it by lot. It's not by lot. It's not in GPS, to my knowledge.
It should be.
It should be, and we shouldn't have to go through this. But if you look at the map, there's a chunk in here that is on one side of Huff Road that is in general purpose. And the request is to take that little chunk there and make that residential, because one side of Huff Road is residential, the other side is general purpose.
Not
the entire, just this little chunk, this little white chunk
South
here.
South Barbara Road to Chantel Lane.
Yeah, and it's that's why we said it in there. So you, and I'm not, I wish we could give you a better answer on this, but I'm just saying that, and we said I think we want to go at 1,000 feet, I believe.
1,000 feet.
So we're trying to make
westerly.
That part. We have to go, because it's in the ordinance, the ordinance refers to this map, then we have to go to the voters to ask to do this, to change the ordinance.
So if you change that 1,000 feet to residential,
yeah,
and the remainder of the westerly side of Huff Road remains in
general purpose.
Now, what about those homeowners? Are they going to be coming forward and wanting... Maybe
no, this should go all the way.
They have the right to do so.
I think this goes all the way. Doesn't this make the whole thing green? I think it does.
Yeah.
To South Waterboro. So we're basically filling in that blank there. That is currently one side of Huff Road is general purpose, the other is residential, making both sides up for 1,000 feet back residential.
Okay,
no, we're not making.
Now,
we're
now
asking
I'm,
for.
Now I'm confused because you just said that. It only went to Chantel Lane and there forward to.
Well, I'm looking at Chantel. Maybe my eyes aren't good. My eyes aren't good enough, but it looks to me like it picks up the whole thing.
If you do this, it makes all the Huff Road residential, right?
We're going right here.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Chantel Lane, all the way up.
All right. I have this one concern.
Oh, wait a second. Let's see if we get to.
Yeah.
Well, right, Dave.
If I owned the 9 1/4 acre lot and I wanted to subdivide it,
yeah,
I would file for a variance with the appeals board, and they will give you a variance,
okay,
so you can have two lots that are undersized lots, but the appeals board is allowed to provide you with that variance.
Okay,
this will be issues about whether that's true or not, but you throw it to the lawyer, and the lawyer will tell you, yes, the appeals board has the right to provide a variance on almost anything in town.
Okay.
Well, we came in June of 2001 to the meeting. This is what we were told, 21. This is what we were told to do.
Okay. Now, you did what you were told to do. You did it. We put it in here as an amendment. We're trying to explain what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
If, I mean, you can always come up with some reason, but, and maybe there's a variance process you could go through, but let's not get into that now. We're talking about the wording of this particular amendment. And so if that's what it says.
I live on Sweats Lane, which this would affect.
Yeah.
There's three businesses on that lane that you're going to put in residential. Now, if I get put in residential where I'm a farm, that affects my laws that I have. So right now I'm covered under Right to Farm Act.
Yeah.
And that right now the way it's set up is I can leave Sweats Lane, I can take a left, stay on general purpose, and be out on South Waterboro Road and stay out residential.
Well, no.
Yes.
No.
I'm going to say farming is allowed in the residential district.
But it's not protected.
It's
not protected.
If South Waterboro Road, both sides of it are residential. The way I'm looking at it, unless I'm looking at it wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I don't think
so. You also have a private road there that would allow more houses on a private road, and you know how good that works.
Well, if you look at them, again, this one here is marked 500 feet. It looks to me like 500 feet either side of South Waterboro Road is residential. That's the way it looks. I mean, we can discuss it at a later time, but
right. But you're on a state road then. You're not in a residential.
I know, there's been about general purpose. If you're on South Waterboro Road, you're not in general purpose. You're in residential.
Yes, but if you change residential on Sweats Lane, you've got three businesses on Sweats Lane that now get put in residential.
Okay.
So, That's my concern with this, is this affects quite a few people.
Was the suggestion that Mr. Jewell may ever broach to...
To be honest, that makes zero sense to me, what he just said. It wasn't. This is what, when we came to the meeting, we were told, this is what you need to do, we'll get it rolling. And then we came to the October 21 meeting, and they said, yes, that's exactly what you need to do, move forward with it, and now we're here today.
Right.
Now, the reality of it is a property that has 10 acres, or 9.5 acres, if it can't be divided because it can't be divided, that's the rules of the town has right now.
Right.
Well, yes, but we have the right to...
So they're asking
to attempt to amend that.
That can be waived by the ZBA.
And your business shouldn't impede on the right to do that, unfortunately.
I bought property there in that zone for a reason.
Well, you're farther up the Sweats Lane, aren't you?
I am.
Where are you on Sweat Lane itself?
Yes.
Well.
We have 57 abuts Sweats Lane.
Well, this looks like that would affect you. The way that this is worded.
Is there a way to amend it so it doesn't affect Sweats Lane and it just affects that particular?
We're not going to solve anything here. We're here to get input. We got your input. We're not trying to put anything that's going to adversely affect anyone here. We're trying to correct it. I mean, the intention of this was to correct an issue that was adversely affecting at least one resident. Now,
right.
If it adversely affects another resident, then that's an issue. So we need to look into that.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Well, there's all the way down to Chantel Lane. There's a lot of other homes there. Most of them have I know the property that we sold on the Huff Road was over 10 acres.
Yeah.
They can put, you know, how many more homes in there. You're going to be affecting more than just his place by adding a lot more houses, and that's kind of not what the comprehensive plan wanted to retain the rural character of our town with the
Remember, the
lots.
Comprehensive plan cuts both ways if you read it.
Right.
If you read it, it cuts both ways. I've got your input. I don't know what I'm going to do with all of it, but we've got some input here, which is the purpose of the public hearing. So, does any board members have any, planning board members have any questions or comments you want to make? Yeah, maybe there's a way to make this better.
Or maybe we should have a public hearing just on that.
Yeah, separate public hearing.
Should be a separate public hearing just on that.
Do you allow use of variance?
Yes.
One of the things is contract zoning.
Okay, well, let's...
Variance to put this instead of that.
But we're going
to
move it along here. Yeah, Judy, you had a question? A comment? Final comment?
It just doesn't seem correct to me to change the zoning, a town zoning, to benefit one family, because you're going to be having everybody that wants to have something.
Well, that's the purpose of a public hearing, and your comments are noted, and their comments are noted, and we'll go on from there. I mean, you're right, but zoning is voted on by town voters. So the zoning can be changed as long as it's voted in, and maybe there's another way to do it. But anyhow, this is one way it could be done. One way it could be done, and maybe it affects. That's why you have public hearings. So we got two sides here. Dave, final comment?
Yeah, one of the things you do when you propose a zoning change, one of the major things you do is see what it's going to affect. And if there's three businesses within this small area, it appears to me that it's going to affect three businesses.
Thank you. Okay.
And I have our intention was never to affect anyone around us. We simply just want to be able to divide up my parents' property as we see fit. Our intention, again, was never to disrupt your business or any of the other businesses or anyone else's property, for that matter. So the least disruptive way is preferable. And if we can find a resolution to that does not affect anyone around it, that we in no way want to upset what anyone else has going on.
No, thank you for your comment on that. But that's remember, great. You know, getting back to the original point, unfortunately or fortunately, I mean, maybe when you buy a house or buy a property, you're under the zoning that exists at that time. And sometimes the zoning is good for you. Sometimes the zoning may not be good for you, depending on what the zone is and what the restrictions are. So, but the zoning ordinance is a living document voted on by voters in the town. It can be changed. So that's the purpose. The purpose here was to try to do some good. Maybe we're doing some bad. So we need to figure that out if we can and go on from there. So, but it is a living document. But remember, when your parents or when you or me or whoever buys a property, you're under the zoning requirements of that. I'm not saying people know that, but you're under those zoning requirements. And you say, oh, my God, I can't do that. Why not? It seems logical. Well, it may seem logical, but it's under the zoning.
It was 1985.
No, I'm not criticizing your parents by any means. They're probably younger than I am anyway, so let's get on with it. Okay, so any other... Thank you for your... I think I'm done with the public hearing unless anybody else has comments. So everyone's had a chance. We've noted your comments. We'll do the best we can to address them. So public hearing is now... motion, please.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say.
Aye.
Okay, public hearing is closed. Those who want to stick around, we're going to go into... We're going to open the planning board... continue with the planning board public meeting. And welcome to the July 6, 2022 meeting of the Lyman Planning Board. This meeting will come to order. This is a public proceeding unless the board specifically votes to go into executive session. You have the right to hear everything that's being said and to look at all the exhibits that are offered. If the board votes to go into executive session, the reason for the same shall be stated. Please notify the chairman if you're having difficulty seeing or hearing. This meeting is being recorded for YouTube. It's not being recorded. It's being recorded, period. In each instance, the burden is upon the applicant to demonstrate compliance with the provisions of the applicable ordinances. After the board votes on the merits of each project, it will prepare a written opinion, which may be forwarded within, which will be forwarded within 7 days. The board works from a prepared agenda. We'll be considering this meeting's items in the following order. Okay, we have Evo Towers and Site Services, map 4, lot 45-323 Middle Road. Lyman application for a new transmission telecommunications tower. We also have Jason Buya Logging LLC, map 7, lot 103 and 1070 Alfred Road, Lyman. Application for a wood recycling yard for brush, trees, stumps, and making mulch. Minutes, don't think we have. New business, we have a John Tibbetts email, which we'll look at for a proposed zoning change for Huff Road. Old business, Corey Patterson signed site plan. I don't know if Corey has done that. And the planning board agenda subject to change without notice. So we'll continue.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would like to make a motion to allow Kelly to be a full voting member tonight.
Sir. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
So noted. So voted. So done. Okay, so let's go on down. Now, what we have here, this is a continuation of our, we had a previous meeting and we voted your application complete.
And we have requested that we add some more details to the plans to show the setback dimensions. So we have copies from this evening. We have updated sheets C1, C2, and C3. And we have 8 copies of half size and 1 full size set for you in your file. What we've done is we've shown the existing log cabin home and the existing kennel on the property in relation to the property lines and in relation to the proposed facility.
Okay.
So that is on sheet C1, which is the boundary survey.
Okay.
C2.
So C2 and C3, because it's a large lot, they show the two other buildings, but I didn't cloud up the plan with more dimensions and measurements. But I think C1 should provide everything you're looking for.
Right.
Yeah, I can. Okay.
I think it was item 3 or 6. You asked for.
Item 3 was proposed. We wanted you to add existing buildings, right?
Yep. You
did that.
So we've added buildings, and then we talked about.
I see what they kind of look like.
I think the log halls shows setbacks, what existing setbacks, but you wanted to see existing and proposed, so we've added that. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that was the only item, the only homework assignment we had.
Full size.
Yes. Keep this all together.
Got to keep it together around losing. Oh, here's a little business here. And you added some other additional information. This was at least in the packet here. From
A&D Clum.
A&D Clum. Is it Clum?
Clum. K-L-U-M-B. Clum. They're doing a analysis, an environmental analysis, as part of an additional to the town requirements. We have federal requirements. So part of the National Environmental Policy Act is we have to look at the potential impact to historic properties, Native American properties, and that sort of thing. And so they send out a request to the towns if there's a local historian, as well as the state historic preservation officer and the tribal historic preservation officers. So you may have received that as a query. So if anyone had any comments or concerns, it's a legal requirement under the federal review.
Okay, well, let me just. I'm going to read this. Just so, do you guys have a copy of this?
Yep.
Or
not? Yes.
Well, the thing that first part is pretty self-explanatory. The first paragraph. Second paragraph, it says, the Maine Historic Preservation Commission and the FCC require that the municipality and any local historical commission society be notified of this project. So, I don't know whether do we have a historical society?
We do.
How do we notify them? Tell them, I guess. Who's on? I don't know.
Evelyn Lord is the secretary, and she's on my. She lives on my road.
We're going to have to notify her, I guess.
I can send her notice of that. Okay.
And then it says.
That has to be an official notification, not just a friend to friend.
No, I understand that, but okay. So.
Again, we don't official, have. Any.
We don't have access to any of the. We don't have email from.
Do they have an actual address or a place that they meet, or is it kind of ad hoc?
They do. They do meet. But how would an official notice from us or request
I would
request
think
come
maybe just
through?
We could send them a copy of this letter.
I can send this. I can do that.
Absolutely.
I can send this.
But we need to send it somehow. Make sure we get a. We ought to get a signature or something that they've got it. I mean, if we're supposed to do it,
I can scan it from my own personal scanner, but is that?
I think it's not a. The interesting thing about this is the FCC requires us to look at what's called the Area of Potential Effect, the APE, mm-hmm. and it's a half a mile from the tower site. Mm-hmm. So if there are any historic properties within a half a mile from the tower site, well, to get from the tower site to the middle road is 800 feet, so
right.
You're almost pushing it right off the bat. You know, so there's not a large area, but that's really, you know, what they're required to look at. And even then, it's a question of, is there a visual detrimental impact to a historic property within that half a mile? We couldn't even see it.
Right.
So, but it is a requirement that we notify them.
Okay.
And if they want to comment on it, they're more than welcome to comment.
But they're going to, but they're just starting their review, aren't they?
No, so... This is part of the review. Basically, A&D Clum are like accredited, so they will do the findings, they will do the review, and then they will issue their finding whether they think there's no impact. Then they send that to the FCC and say, based on our, I mean, they're a hired consultant, but they're, you know, I can't influence them, just as if, you know, we're scientists or whatnot. So they'll say, based on our review, and you know, we haven't received any negative comments, we believe there's no impact to the area of potential effect. But if somebody else came up and said, whoa, time out, we think there is, then we have that discussion and then we review it. And because they're an accredited firm, the FCC will take their opinion, provided there aren't others that stand up and say, we do have a problem.
The only thing is, this letter to the town of Lyman, to whom it may concern, sort of tells, I mean, it looks like the Clum is putting it on us to...
It's really, and she may not have worded it well, but it's really just to see if you have a concern, if the Historic Commission has a concern, it gives you an opportunity to comment. That's all it's doing.
So,
it's putting you on notice and providing you notice that project has been proposed and you have an opportunity to comment. You don't need to comment. The Historic Commission doesn't need to respond. It's just that they, if there is one, they should be made aware of the project.
So they should have been
informed. Should have gone directly to the selectmen.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe they sent it to the wrong place. If they sent it to the planning board, I don't know if it was addressed to you or to the selectmen.
It just
says Town of Lyman.
Yeah, so it should have probably gone to the selectmen.
I think
by the time they get it, it's going to be over the 30 days.
Well,
it says,
please contact
me at the contact below within 30 days of receipt of this letter, if this project will directly.
That's their request. That's not.
Yeah.
That's. I mean, they're putting basically, this is a form letter which they sent out.
Yeah.
And they're passing the buck to us. Okay. So that's great, except the buck, we don't have anybody to pass the buck to, except we need to pass the buck to the select board and to the Historical Society.
Right. And again, it's really just to ask for comments.
Yeah.
If they don't have any comments, we don't want comments that to generate comments, but if someone does have a comment,
but
we make them aware.
To close the loop, it would be nice if, it seems to me at least, I don't know what the other board members think, it'd be nice to have the select board and the Historical Society say, hey, we don't have any comments.
Right.
Because if they don't, we just send it to them and they rip it up or throw it away, then we don't know whether they even looked at it. Then somebody says,
I wonder who put it in your packet.
We got it from the code enforcement office.
So they got it. Okay, so that's why I wonder who received it. So
it must have, I don't blame anybody from sending it to code enforcement.
Sure, sure.
That's
no,
what I
would
do.
It's a town alignment, it's surprising.
Our issue right now is that we don't, as of tomorrow, we have no support, no administrative support.
So the administrator is leaving as well?
Correct.
Yes.
So I guess the only thing I could do is maybe ask Cecile to send a memo
yes.
to the Board of Selectmen and to the Historical Society and copying this letter.
I will.
And saying, please give us a yes or a no if there's any issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see there's a commitment here that our findings will be submitted in a report to the Maine Historic Preservation Commission upon completion of research. I would think that they would also copy the selectmen and our town's Historical Society as well.
You would think so.
And the interesting thing is, with the last project that you reviewed in 2014-15, they went through the same process and they were found to have no effect. And the approval, not really approval, but the acknowledgement runs with the land, not with the project. So technically, I talked with them and I said, do we really even need to do this because it has been done once? And sometimes you send things to the FCC and these agencies multiple times and then they get confused and it creates a whole different issue. I said, well, you probably don't, but because it's been such a while, we probably should. So we err on the side of caution, and so we've done it again. But I don't know if technically we were required to, but it can't hurt. If someone has an issue, it's going to come out now or it's going to come out at another date.
Would you have to have a copy of the original response?
You would. I would. I wasn't involved with that project. But it's in your file. Patty showed me. She had a big file of it.
Has anything changed since the issuing
right,
of this?
Right, right.
No, there hasn't. Yes, there hasn't. Here's the data.
And again, there are the criteria for deeming a property of historic value, I think, is the property has to be 45 years old. Now, my house is 90 years old, and it's not historic. So,
yeah.
Okay.
But that's what gives them an opportunity.
That's one item. What else we got to do here?
So is it for public hearing?
Yeah.
Okay, public hearing is...
Mm-hmm. We're talking about 20 days ago.
Well, we're talking about
August 3rd
would be the next meeting.
Yeah.
The next one would be Tulsa. Yeah.
Okay, we have to have a public hearing within 45 days of when we determine the application is complete. Let me see, there's other, we got to notify. Okay, under 835 application on page 34, the top there, it says, once the board votes that the application is complete, the board may require a sidewalk. Okay, we did the sidewalk. Before the board can take any action on the application, we shall hold a public hearing within 45 days. And, okay, which we don't want to wait 45 days, but that's our outer limit. The planning board shall notify the code enforcement officer, board of selectmen, and zoning board of appeals at least 20 days in advance of a public hearing. So we got to send out a notice of public hearing. Mm-hmm. And this shall include the date, time, and location of the hearing. And we also shall notify all neighboring property owners within the required distance by certified mail at least 10 days in advance of a public hearing, and also publish a notice of the hearing in a newspaper of general circulation at least 10 days in advance, including the time, date, location of the hearing. And we shall post it in the municipal building here and on the town website. So basically, we should establish a date, and we got to notify them, give them at least 20 days. So that's going to put us to a couple of meetings then, won't it?
Yeah, so we should be good for
August 3rd.
Yeah, August 3rd, but not so fast, as the saying goes. Who's going to do this stuff?
That is a really good question.
Sending out the notifications. We got to do all this other stuff, and it's not your problem. It's our problem, town's problem.
I've provided 3 sets of labels for all the abutters, so hopefully that'll make it a little easier.
Right.
But it's physically, I know, stuff in envelopes.
We don't even have access to any equipment or technology that could allow us to do that. No. So I don't know. That's a big problem.
Is it inappropriate for me to do it? The applicant is required to do it?
I think under the circumstances that we officially send it right straight to the select board clerk and go here.
But they don't have one yet.
They have one.
They're starting on Monday,
so we're going to be in a good
Monday,
issue.
By next Wednesday, if it goes out by next Wednesday, you're covered.
Let's for go 20 by next days. Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that we're 7, 14, 21, 27 days to the next meeting, to the August 3rd. And you've got to send it out 20 days.
Mm-hmm. So, by sending it out, we just have to notify them. So that's not
by regular mail or certified?
No.
Certified.
That's the property owners.
Right, but that's a
that's little, the 10 days.
That's 10 days.
That's 10 days. But that's a little bit of a pain.
It is a pain.
Send it all up.
Plus, we gotta get into a newspaper at least 10 days in advance. So 10 days for the newspaper and the notification of.
But it sounds like to the boards is the 20 days.
The other ones have 20 days,
so
but we can do that. That's not a problem. We just have to tell them by email or some official statement. And we should put it on the, it's got to get on the, of course, the town website, too. But I would suggest that I don't know whether we can do this or not. We can always postpone it. But we can set the public hearing for the...
When's the public hearing? For August 3rd. August
6:45.
Let's
give the town, the select board, plenty of notice.
Yeah, I'm afraid they're not going to come to do it.
I don't want to miss another month.
Exactly.
I'd be happy to put the stamps on the envelopes and send them out.
They got to go
certify
the abutters.
Because that way, because we had an issue where I wasn't notified.
Right.
Here's a signature receipt.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll get on that.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll establish then tentatively a public hearing on the...
The 6:45?
Yeah, I don't... It doesn't make any difference. Let's do it. Okay, let's do it at 6:45. It's could go on for an hour.
Or it could be 2 minutes.
Yep.
And that's August 3rd?
Yeah. And we'll, maybe we can work out something. I don't know how we're going to... We got to get some assistance, so we're going to be out of luck here. It's not going to work well. Okay. So what else?
Mr. Mind is done. Do you remember from yesterday's selectmen's meeting that they are holding a workshop tomorrow?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe one of us being here, expressing, notifying them that way, to see
it'd
if the newly hired select group can get this underway.
Cecile, would it be possible to come up with something in writing so we have an official on the record presentation laid up in the records and archives?
That that we're at a standstill right now, that we have no... What do you want me to put down for a record? I can do that.
Just because we have no administrative support.
Right.
We have no ability to fulfill 8.3.5. The side of things with public hearing.
Okay.
And we respectfully request that the select board, through their newly hired administrative
address the situation expeditiously.
Is there a planning board email for the chair or secretary or somebody?
There is
a planning board email, but it doesn't come to any of us. It goes to the code enforcement officer.
Because I have Patty's email, but obviously that's not going to...
Mm-hmm. You have CEO at Lyman? Yeah, but that goes to the office there, but that doesn't go to anybody.
Well, that's why I'm asking if it's appropriate to get another email so I can confirm that we're all good.
I believe the website has a planning board
email
address, but heaven knows it must go to code enforcement because none of us have access to that.
Now, the town clerk, she's staying for a while. So if I have any questions, maybe I can go through the town clerk, which we do in many cases. The town clerk knows all.
They know everything.
Yeah. So maybe that's what we'll see.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry that this is a sort of embarrassing.
No, not at all. I mean, this small town, big town.
We're not able to.
It happens everywhere.
Accommodate you very well. Well, okay. What else do we need to do with this gentleman? I think we've set the public hearing, and then we'll go on from there.
Yeah. So hopefully we can make that happen.
Yep. Thank you for showing up at the
site walk. Thank you for showing up. Hopefully you can go home and check and you don't have any critters that
they got.
That you don't want.
You have to do a full-scale inspection.
And you don't want to do a body search.
I think we're good. You have the revised plans. You have a forward.
Yeah.
See you on the 3rd.
Oh, we got one more thing of business. Now we got John Tibbetts.
Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're together.
Is this out here for the public or?
Uncertain.
Oh,
I don't know whose that was.
Was that over there?
It was probably set for Patty when she would have been sitting over there.
Yeah, I thought she was supposed to be at the meeting. I thought she said she was going to be at the meeting today. So she would be good.
Don't know.
I'll have to collect all this stuff when we finish.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Where's that be?
Okay, we have something to read here. If I can find it, it was in this file.
Under new business.
Under new business.
Do we want to give one more call out for Mr. Jason Williams, if he's present?
I don't see him.
Put him on the schedule for the next meeting?
Yeah, let's put him on the next meeting schedule. That's all we can do.
Record it as a no-show.
Yeah, 20.
Yeah.
do have maps here. I hear football here.
Oh, to sign?
No, no, this is the site plans for that, for the, what he wants to go.
So was the intention for us to look at this without him being present?
Well, I think...
Because we have questions that need to be answered, right? Okay.
Do you want to review that now or not?
No.
Not without the applicant.
Any questions or...
Right.
Okay. I'm going to... Your name again is?
Jonathan Tibbetts.
John Tibbetts. Okay, now, did you send this email?
That is my father.
Your father. Okay, I'm going to read the email.
I don't know what he did.
I'm sorry?
I don't know what he did.
Okay, this is dated...
But he sent you here.
Yeah, well, no, I came for other stuff. I just
right.
Okay, this is a new. This is under new business, but it really talks about Huff Road. And this is from John Tibbetts, Sr. Proposed zoning change for Huff Road. Hello. I'd like to address the proposed change zoning change for Huff Road and Swett's Lane. On Swett's Lane, there are two established long-term businesses that could be adversely affected by this change. They are Swett's Well Drilling and Pump Company, okay, and Tibbetts Farm. I realize that I'm a selectman and Tibbetts Farm is my son's business. For those two reasons, I will not be speaking at the public hearing. Because of this, I ask you to consider the following. The farm's location at the end of a private road bordered by woods on all sides. For instance, he has purchased adjacent land when available to increase his buffer, is ideal for my son's business. He feels that he's able to not impact any neighbors with the smells, noise, and traffic of his agricultural business. For the past 5+ years, he has leased the Hammond Farm on Old North Berwick Road. That lease is coming to an end in December. He is in the process of building two barns, one for 60-plus beef cattle, calf operation, and one for sheep for the 100-plus flock of Katahdin sheep, if I got this pronounced not right, that are currently leased to, to graze a solar farm. Solar farm, I guess, is not there. I don't know. Is it a different location?
We're contracted by... Blue Wave, sheep are actually in Augusta underneath solar panels.
I know, but it's not there, it's some other place.
I have sheep on that property.
But where's the solar panel?
In Augusta.
Oh, okay, all right. With excavation, building roads, making sure it's proper drainage and manure storage, this is a $400,000 major project for a small business. The impact of this is every bit of feed has to be trucked in and every bit of manure has to be trucked out year-round. He also has a snowplow business with 3 trucks and a large farm tractor. Swett's Well Drilling also has large trucks using this road year-round. This is the reason why Swett's and Tibbetts maintain the private road year-round. The proposal to extend the residential zone up Swett's Lane 1,000 feet will result in an adverse situation for both businesses by creating the potential for more housing on this private road they maintain. It will also create a situation where both businesses will be forced to do all their trucking through a residential area. Okay. My concern is, in general, after a lifetime of being involved in agriculture, the normal operations of a farm can annoy neighbors. For example, the sounds of calves being separated from the mothers is quite loud and can go on for days. There can be a lot of truck traffic, machinery noise, and the smell of manure. The more people we pass, the higher potential for complaints. The state of Maine has a strong right to farm law, but it doesn't hold up in residential areas. Would a better solution be for these people with their 9-plus lot who want to add another house to take it before the ZBA with a possible recommendation from the planning board to get a variance? This solution, I think, will solve their issue without affecting their neighbors. Thank you for listening to me. Respectfully, John Tibbetts. Mm-hmm. Well stated. I've got a good points. My personal thought is, and again, it's not something we need necessarily to vote on, on this zoning change, it seems to me that as a bare minimum, we ought to be officially contacting every house and property that would be affected.
Right.
Because even though we have a public hearing, this gentleman is taking the time to come and express his concerns. But I don't know that there are other people And also, I don't also know, my personally, I don't know whether this zoning board, I'd have to read the wording and see whether that's even possible for them to grant a variance for that one lot.
Along those lines, to see if that approach would be viable, would it be appropriate for us to ask the Board of Selectmen to ask the town attorney to weigh in on this? And if you get the green light there, then it makes the rezoning moot, and they can simplify it as they wish.
If I remember correctly, at the same time this one came in, there was one request off South Waterboro Road, which was essentially been spot zoning. I remember the request were comment about a variance was brought up, and the response we were given is, no, we can't do this, because if we do this one, then everyone along this track is going to want to do it. And
oh, you mean this went to the ZBA, you say, or didn't? Or that was our discussion?
I believe Patty at the time said, No, we can't do that, because now we're looking at having 5 acres down South Waterboro Road, 3-acre lot, 5-acre, 3-acre, 5-acre, 3-acre. So it would create inconsistent zoning. And would it run with the property? Or would it revert at change of ownership?
But there were conditions for allowing a variance, and one of them is a hardship. And if they, it depends on how they present their case, hardship would be a reason where you would grant it to a party and not make it available to anyone else.
At least in spirit, I think it's in keeping with LD 2003.
That's the other thing I didn't mention, I thought of that.
Accessory dwelling units, that is emphasized in that new law.
Right.
So I think that would also work in their favor.
Yes.
The only thing is, I know Dave isn't here too, but standards for variance, there's a section here on variance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it says under 9.2.11, maybe I'm cherry picking it, but
don't forget.
It's on page 45. It just says, as used in this ordinance, a variance is authorized only for height, area, size of structure, size of yard, or open spaces. Shall not be granted because of present nonconformities, blah, blah, blah. Majority vote of the Board of Appeals, I guess. And then it says, except as provided in section C and D, which is on the other side. It says board may grant a variance only when the strict application would cause undue hardship, and then it describes undue hardship, which might not apply here. And then it finally says that in order for variance to be granted, all four of the hardship conditions must be met. So their question is because they want to subdivide the land, which I don't disagree with them, except it's in the wrong zone, the incorrect zone for that application.
Can a case be made for each of these four criteria? The land in question cannot yield a reasonable return unless the variance is granted. The need for the variance is due to the unique circumstances of the property and not the general condition of the neighborhood.
Well,
back to unique again.
I guess the unique could be that the property is sandwiched, is sandwiched by a residential, surrounded by residential zoning, is sort of unique in that it's not a continuous flow of general
then
purpose.
If I'm interpreting LD 2003 correctly, which I watched today, and shaking my head in dismay, they could, with passage of LD 2003, put up a large single-family residence with an ADU over an attached garage and then slap up a secondary single-family residence on that lot. Mm-hmm. And we can't do anything about it.
Right.
Well, I think the only thing I get out of this is that this whole issue is more complicated than initially presented, in the sense that the desire to help out one homeowner there is certainly a valid desire, but we can't, you can't help out one zone owner and homeowner and then affect others in that same area that are in an existing zone, because obviously residential is much more restrictive from land use point of view than general purposes. So you can't just, my opinion is that you can't just say, okay, yeah, for one person who comes in and asks for it, I mean, the bare minimum is to ask everybody and get a written or something from each homeowner there, or some kind of a notification, you know, indication that they've been notified. And we obviously have pushback from at least one homeowner in that area who has a business.
Judy also.
Am I allowed to speak in the park?
Sure. Yes, go ahead. We're just trying to figure this out.
With my property, I ended up having to purchase more acres to do what I wanted to do. And from my understanding, they're trying to provide a secondary dwelling for their mother, which they can do under the way the ordinances are written now. It's just the size requirement for the secondary dwelling. I had to go through the same process already. You know, so for them, to me, it seems pretty extreme to go to be able to divide that in three house lots for siblings and for kids when it was never intended in that zone.
Well, I think the lady there made a point that it was never their intention to impact other neighbors.
Oh, and I've talked to her. I'm not upset with what she's doing, and I don't.
No.
I think there's other ways to do it other than this zone change. You know?
Well, that may be possible. And I think, but what we need to do is get some legal advice on this, because we're not going to solve this problem. Obviously, if it was residential, you could go 3, 3, and 3, probably. Sounds like it could be divided up.
3, 3, and 3.5, yeah.
Yeah, so there'd be room for that. But, you know, that's not a reason to change it for the whole area. It might, and right now, I'm not sure if this variance appeal process would even work for a single house, because I don't know that they'd have to make their case as to why.
And it has to be four criteria. And changing the zoning, we can't do it. It's got to be done by the will of the people in the vote.
Well, yeah. But anyhow, this is more complicated than I thought, for me, my opinion, at least. So we're not going to solve this issue.
Again, requesting
gotta get some help.
Selectmen to refer this to the town attorney, at least informally, maybe put that on their radar tomorrow during their workshop. And I know I'm asking a lot here, Sue, but maybe in the course of the formal request for administrative assistance for the public hearing, maybe some allusion, some reference to this situation as well, to see if the town attorney could weigh in as to whether this situation could be rectified through an appeal to the ZBA.
Yeah. Okay, I think we got some work to do. Well, this is just the tip of the iceberg, I'm afraid. Okay, I know this thing is getting a little long, so we have established we're going to come up with an agenda for the next meeting.
Weigh the information that's provided at the public hearing on the ordinances with a view towards adjusting the language, particularly in the contract zoning proposal, contacting the State Board of Marijuana Policy, although depending upon who you get, may impact on the advice that you get. But nonetheless, we would make the overture to them to try to get some clarification on the 500-square-foot canopy issue.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess we're going to dig that file out of medical marijuana.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm going to package again, I guess we got to send stuff back to Patty, but she's not going to be around here for more than another day or so.
I think tomorrow's the last day, right?
Yeah.
So.
Tomorrow or the 8th?
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow, yeah.
Thank you, Janet. She's the 8th. She's the 8th. Yeah.
Maybe some MMA help as well. Maybe on both of these issues. This is the 8th and also the,
MMA?
The 500-foot canopy issue.
Yeah. And we're also a member of the Southern Maine Regional Planning Committee.
They're mighty good.
Yeah. Well, the problem is like everything else, we're going to have to figure out how to word it such to have it go and get an answer that means something, mm-hmm. which right. is not as simple as it sounds.
I know.
It takes a little bit of time to do that. So.
See what I can do. I'll see what I can do.
Okay. Because if we only had a teacher.
Well, we have close, we've had information, but
and the window looks as high.
Okay, I think we have our agenda for the next one, and we need to sign. I guess we need to sign the that was here the site 40 plans that was here to be signed, so we can.
I don't see that.
What about those, Mark? Huh? Isn't that Corey?
That's the Bollier.
No, this is the Bollier.
Oh no, okay. Let's see if that.
I don't see the site plan. For,
I hope it's not in this pile here. Let me look in Rod's pile.
I would think it would be a large.
It should be a large roll-up one that can be recorded at the Registry of Deeds.
Nope, I don't see it.
Bump that to the next meeting as well.
Bump that to the next meeting. I guess I'll do that.
So, just to review action items, too, I'm going to scan this. I'm going to send it to the town, the select board clerk, and I'm going to CC Evelyn Ward, who's the secretary to the Historical Society.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Official recording of all our correspondence. So if it gets delayed, it's not on us.
All right.
Did we make any contact with Corey Patterson about the site plan that needs to be signed?
I mean, I signed the approval, you know, the permit, but we need the site plan. I guess they can't submit it to the registry until we sign it, mm-hmm. and that's supposed to be done within so many days. Mm-hmm. But it's not here.
But if it's failed, we produced.
Do you have any ability to notify him of that or not? Is that, do you have any contact info? I don't know if we got anything.
He must have an email. Maybe he has an email address, but.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm screwed up. It's my fault. Here's this thing to sign.
You have it. All right.
I had it all the time.
All right.
This is in the file. That's my mistake. I'm sorry. We'll sign. This is for Corey Patterson. Take care of that right now.
Never mind just the heck of the first conversation with the gentleman that lives down in the southern portion of Old Northport Road, Warren Brooks.
Yeah.
He mentioned that cement trucks are kind of cruising down on their way to Stonyfield at 5 a.m. in the morning. He locks them in. He's up at that time anyway, but I know we have regulations in terms of when the gravel pits can operate. Is it outside of anyone's jurisdiction about the trucks moving in? That's like 2 hours before they can open up, right? 7 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes.
And there's no code enforcement officer to refer to this, right. too. So, we'll pass it on to the selectmen.
Mm. Yeah, because you know, I've seen notices on a couple of the Facebook pages commenting about the speed and the size of the trucks going down Old North Berwick Road and the hours. And I thought with his home, he was very specific that the majority of his vehicles was going to go down to Plumley or down Middle Road because it was easier and cheaper for them to get the turnpike that way.
So I'll pass this one, please.
Yes. Now they may not be going to this on, they may be, I don't know, the other gravel pit located on the road.
Where's the other gravel?
Du Bois.
Yeah.
Who gave you that one, Joe?
That was Lauren Brooks. 514 Old North Road.
Did he make any, what did he make any complaint for?
No complaint. He just kind of passed it on to me.
Well, that should really ought to go somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah, and you can file a complaint online.
Do you want to send that to him? Or
I'll take your...
Pass it as an info item?
Sure will.
Sometimes people will complain on public forums or to a representative and kind of want to not make a formal complaint because they don't want to get their name out there.
I think in this case, it wasn't certain exactly to whom it should be directed.
Well, that's a problem we have. We don't have any enforcement.
No, that's probably be a complaint you want to give the selectmen. They do.
They will
complaints
accept
every meeting anyway.
Yep. I saw that last night. Yeah.
They will accept complaints. I'll put this back in the file. I'll stick it back in Rod's folder. Give it back to Patty. Or to put it in there. All right, is there anything else that we want to talk about?
Another administrative issue. The last time when Patty left, she distributed spreadsheets for us to maintain our own records of time spent on the board here and whatever, and we would submit them to somebody. So now we have no spreadsheet, and we don't have anyone to submit
them. I saw Jeanette. I was looking at something for the hiring committee today, and I talked to Jeanette for a minute, the treasurer, mm-hmm. and mentioned that something similar happened last time, something along that same line, and asked her what she wanted us to do. And she said she was going to mention it to the select at their workshop, mm-hmm. so which is tomorrow, supposedly.
Sounds like
it. I don't know, we keep track of our time, but we're in the same situation again. It's the same mess again.
And the professional backfilling would be ridiculous.
I mean, it's
the workshop is at 6?
Yeah.
Is it at 6?
I don't know.
All right.
We'll
check on the website.
Maybe for the next meeting, a little discussion of the presentation on LD 2003,
yes.
As presented by the Southern Maine Development.
Did anyone else get a chance to?
No, you're going
to
send me
the video.
I missed.
You're considering my presumption that 2.5 buildings per lot and stack them in, and our zoning's not going to matter because
I don't think it would have been approved if it was that restricted.
Right, and I think we still need 2,000 square feet for each dwelling unit sewer thing, so I think...
Yeah, water's an issue as well. Bob Sinatra brought that up last night.
One of the things is we have require... I mean, we just barely got an ADU approved within the past couple of years. Mm-hmm. Now what they're saying is, I'm gonna take my lot, I'm gonna turn it into affordable housing. Legally now I can have a single-family house with an ADU. Now I can do another detached house on my same lot, and I'm calling it affordable housing as long as it meets HUD's criteria. We can't stop it.
It's not a subdivision because it's only two units. New units are not exempted from subdivision review. We will explore this.
And I have enough that I can apply for a back lot, which would make another.
I think it's time to go.
There'd be five units.
Can we?
No, I don't. That's why I got the
five. Go ahead, Cecile.
Make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.